Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Welcome to Fighting on Film, the War Movie Podcast. In this new weekly series, we'll be bringing you our review of Masters of the Air as each new episode drops.
Hello, welcome back to Fighting on Film. Don't forget you can catch up on our series on Masters of the Air so far by visiting fightingonfilm.com. And also don't forget to use 10% off at airfix.com by using the code FOFPODCAST. That's all caps, all one word. FOF podcast to get 10% off at Airfix. And please do use it because it's only going to be available for another couple of weeks while the show is getting towards the end. So this week's going to be a double episode because we missed last week's episode 7. We were both busy. So we're going to do 7 and 8. I'm going to cover 7, Matt's going to cover 8, and we're only a week away from the end of the series. Where's the time?
We are approaching the end.
I know.
Yeah. Fast approaching.
What's going to happen to all of our 100th Bond Group buddies that we've grown to love over 9 weeks? I mean, we already know, which is a bit counterproductive, but, where's it going to go? So, episode 7, I think I'll just jump straight in, Matt, shall I?
Go for it.
Lovely. So we open at Stalag Lefree, been narrated by Crosby, and then we're into the Stalag. You've got Egan, Crank, Buck, a lot of the guys who were on their bomber group in their forts are in the Stalag with them. Some of the things, I don't know about you, Matt, but some of the turret gunners never got called by their names. So I find it hard to know who they are.
It's a little bit tricky to associate them directly sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. So it shows sort of the hardships of the camp. They're not eating well. The Red Cross are having issue getting their mail in. Food's scarce, but they get some food from the German the internment guards, not much. And they find and kill a cat to eat, showing how bleak things are. And one guy said, keep it down, it's the only protein we're going to get for a while. It's kind of dire straits, but things aren't awful, but they're not fantastic for our gang in the camp. So they're listening to the news on a homemade radio. There's some mentions of Monte Cassino. There's mentions of Anzio. I think we're in early 1944 at this point.
Yeah, March.
And that's nice. I like that little radio segment. It really helps contextualize the war outside of the group because we don't really get much of that. It's like Banner Brothers, like the Pacific. You're only learning about what's going on in your own little theater. So to have that little bit of a context is nice.
Yeah. It's that seeing the war through their eyes only, isn't it, sort of thing?
Of course, which is absolutely fine. Then we get a roll call. A roll call's called. The huts are searched by the prison guard. And Egan and Buck's radio is found under the table. And Buck makes a comment of saying, well, they didn't get the headphones. And Egan says, oh, well, that's something I guess. So it's a bit, you know, a bit touch and go in the old camp. So then we're back to Thorpe Abbotts. We get replacement crewmen arrive in early 1944. Croz narrates it, you know, saying that some of the crewmen didn't want to get to know the new guys because they'd lost so many friends. One of the crew makes an offhand remark saying they're just kids, man. And then Rosie introduces the new boy, and we learn that the new boys, then we learn that Quinn and Bailey have made it back and they get to go home. And then we have a scene in the mess. And I kind of feel like the mess is really subdued at this point. It's not as raucous. And even though there's piano music and people are having drinks, it doesn't feel as I'm trying to find the word to describe it. And I couldn't get it in my notes properly, but it just didn't feel as vibrant as earlier episodes, because we've lost so many people. You know, Rosie and Croz are the only two principal cast that we really know in there. And then Rosie and Croz are talking about getting 25 missions. You've got to show these new guys that someone can do it. And Rosie's on 24. And then this episode really does switch back and forth between the camp and Thorpe's Abbott. Thorpe Abbott's really chop and change, so I'm going to be doing that as I talk. And then we have Buck and Egan back in the Stalag. They talk about making a crystal radio. Then there's a raid at the camp, and they surmise they're hitting Berlin. You know, the war's ramping up. The Allied air forces are hitting Berlin in the day. Then a prisoner of war's shot, and the dogs attack them. And I think it's sort of implied here and there that the Germans are trying to whittle away the American Jewish. Men that are at the camp. So one man is told, "Oh, Solomon, that's a Jewish name," and he goes, he's just staring at him, and then they bundle him out when the roll call happens. So they're trying to protect their friends, and I think it's sort of semi-implied that they're trying to whittle away the men they don't like. And then we have a narration by Croz again. He mentions obviously the raids on Berlin. There was 15 forts lost on the raid. Damaged forts land, and the base scrambles to get the injured men out. So there's bloodied turrets, men with really severe wounds, men with horrible burns on their faces. And it's as the show goes through, it still wants to show you the toll taken on the men still. You know, the war is not over. It's only going to get worse. And then Croz mentions that March 6th, 1944 was the Black Monday of the bomb group, with 150 men lost. That's no small number. You put that into terms of forts, that's a lot of planes, as the bombing missions on Berlin get bigger and bigger. Then Croz goes to see Sandra to take the edge off. He says it went from a wanting to have someone to talk to, then it turned into a bigger thing. And they're sleeping with each other, sort of having like a semi-casual relationship to sort of take the edge off the war. Then we're back at the Stalag again. Egan and Buck make their crystal radio. Buck and Egan have a chat about wanting to be his best man after the war. Egan mentions about escaping, and we're going to have to pick our moment. And then we're right back at Thorpe's Abbott. So to say it sounds really quick, but this episode really does. I've said it before, Matt will attest that it really switches around. It was doing it last week, but it does it a lot more here. Trying to tell two things.
In episode 8 as well.
Yes, so of course.
It becomes a characteristic of the series, I think.
Trying to tell concurrent stories. And then we have a new colonel, Lieutenant Colonel Bennett's introduced, being in temporary command of the 100th Bomb Group. You might recognise him for playing one of the sergeants in SAS Rogue Heroes. Fun fact, I met him at the premiere for that, and he was telling me that he was in Masters, so it's finally nice to see who he played. He'll hang around for a couple of episodes. I think he's great. His American accent, you know, is as good as anyone's in the show. And he said the target for today is the Berlin ball bearing plant. And one of the men mentions that, and we hit that on Monday. You know, we've already hit that. We're going to hit it again. And people are saying, Croz mentions earlier that they're doing so many missions, the red light never seems to go off because they're doing so many raids. And then we have Rosie and his new crew. He says, "You boys worry about the guns, I'll worry about the plane." And once we're up in the air, there's this massive raid sequence, quite brief. But there's a massive raid sequence on Berlin, and you see this, again, just this sea of planes, you know, like the 1,000-plane raid type thing.
Yeah, the scale's pretty good
again,
in that sequence.
The scale's really good, really good. And Croz mentions that the P-51 is one of the best fighter planes of the war. I was going to discuss it with you, Matt, see what you felt about that. I know we're not big plane guys, but I'd argue...
I always think of it in terms of it being the American Spitfire. That's how I think about P-51s.
Wow, rankle some, I guess. Oh,
probably. I mean, aviation seems to be very contentious whenever we...
Hot topics, yeah.
Yeah, whenever I read some of the comments about aviation stuff on Twitter, it's always hot debate around things.
It is, yeah. I mean, I guess as we say, this show is very much from the American point of view. So I guess if you're in a fort and you've got, 50, 60 P-51 supporting you and they're finally being able to mix it in with the Messerschmitts,
yeah,
then I guess that's going to be the best fighter plane in the war because it can stick with you. So I completely get it. And I guess
that showing the war from their perspective sort of thing.
Yeah, of course. You know, I've read things with my work about, RAF crewmen saying that their support they got was fantastic. So I guess it's all contextualised for where you saw it. But, we see the P-51s come in, seen them go for the Messerschmitts. It's all going off, yet again, another really well shot, really big in scale raid sequence. Quite brief, though. Rhodey gets home. He's had 25 missions. They're all happy. So they're in the mess having a few drinks, and Jack tells Rosie that the tours have been up to 30 or 28. But Rosie was the last one to have 25, so he's going to be able to go home. And then another crewman gets quite upset by this, and he says, "Oh, that's good for you, Rosie, but the rest of us have got to stay here now and do it." And he said,
it's a very interesting scene.
Yeah, he shouts and he says, "They all want us to fucking die up there. No one gives a shit." Which is quite telling, that the fatigue's really setting in now. Then we're back to Stag again. Egan and Bucky listen to the news on their crystal radio again. They're having a little bit of solace from the news. Then Rosie is setting up to go home. And he has a change of heart later on. But then we're straight back to the Stag again. And we have some of the greatest, and I was unexpected, but I think some of the greatest movie referencing in a TV show that I think I've ever heard. So the escape's mentioned. You see a bunch of Luftwaffe security troops going out in the evening, and all of the lads in the hut are like, "Oh, what's going on? Like, that looks serious." Then in the morning you learn of, the great escape's happened. I think there was a bit of contentiousness because the American crews were all it together. So, and I think they were mixed a little bit, weren't they?
Well, there's an interesting scene where after the escape, they're brought before the commandant. And, well, it's not the commandant, it's the deputy commandant who's taking command. The commandant's already been ushered away for allowing the escape to happen.
Yes.
And they say that the SS want to take an inventory of Jews. And the American... ranking officer says there's only Americans at Stalag Luft 3, which is a great line. And I like the line.
Yes.
Obviously, it's not entirely true because
no.
It was all Allied air crews were in different segments of the camp.
Of course.
So you had Britons, Canadians, Australians, New Zealanders, Czechs,
yeah.
South Africans, Commonwealth, French, Greek, Dutch.
Yeah, everyone.
Belgians, everyone's in there. Basically, Allied air crews.
Yeah. But so, for the show, makes sense to have them together.
That impactful moment where he says that it's, we're Americans. We aren't differentiated by creed or race.
Creed is a good line.
It's a good line.
Mm, it is.
But I, for me, this week, I really liked a couple of sequences. The return sequence from Black Monday that you mentioned.
Very good.
Is very strong. A really good montage. The raid sequence you mentioned as well, and I also like the scene where Rosie re-ups and explains why he can't go home at 25. That's very good. But as you say, the Great Escape references were on point.
Very good. So we even get a line that the sub commander of the camp now says, "Because of this Great Escape." And I like it. Like it's very on the nose, but we've had it earlier with Orlov getting some sort of really commando booky references in. But I like the addressing the movie in a sort of kind of natural way. He hasn't gone, you know, you haven't had a direct reference, but you've referenced it a tiny little bit, you know. I like that. I thought it was nice. I was reading something the other week that Matt shared with me. It was, I think it was Screen Rant was surmising whether they were going to actually work in the movie.
Yeah.
At some point. And I was like, well, that would have been incredibly hard to do. You'd have had to recast the original cast and then you'd have had to make space for them to show them. And the way that the series goes from here on in, there's so much going on that I'm like, you'd have had no time. You know, you could have easily done a whole episode of the Stalag, if I'm honest. I wouldn't have minded it either, because I think it's quite strong. And I've got it in my quick alley tally section this week is, I think the mise-en-scène of the camp is really good.
Mm.
I love the huts. I think they look lived in. They look real. And you've got people have, like, you know, torn out pages of books and stuck them on the wall. You've got pin-ups everywhere. You know, little, like, someone's taken a captured German helmet and is, like, storing things in it. It all looks quite lived in. And I really like them.
Olaf shared some behind-the-scenes photos.
Yeah, they're really
today,
nice.
That show the room within the hut that Bucky and Buck are in. And mise-en-scène of it is, the set dressing and design is really good.
Really strong. Yeah, really strong. I like it. And I also like the look of Egan and Buck in the camp. You know, they, I don't know whether it's makeup or they've lost weight, but they do look a little bit drawn in.
Look gaunt at times, don't they?
They look a bit
gaunt. I like how it shows them as dirty, tired.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting contrast with classic depictions of
house,
the Stalagluffs, and stuff.
It's a bit more Rescue Dawn than it is Great Escape. People don't look like Hollywood stars at this point. They look like they've been roughing
Everyone looks
it for
well
a few
fed
weeks.
In the Great Escape.
Yeah, they do actually. Yeah, they do. But you know, I like the Mackinaw coats. I like the great coats, the scarves, and the gloves. I love stuff like that. I like it when shows have got the budget to be able to go, right, it's cold weather, so let's crack out all the cold weather gear. And God knows I love cold weather gear looks on troops. I think it's really nice. There's something about it. Really, really nice this week. And then, yeah, just to quickly sum up the end of the episode there, Matt mentioned that Rosie re-ups for more missions, and he learns from Bennett that the B-17s are going to be used as bait so the P-51s can knock out German aircraft. And he says that's going to be it. You know, if you come back in, Rosie, that's what you're going to be doing. And Rosie's just like, yeah, cool, okay. You know, he's sort of, okay, you know. And I think what we're learning is that Rosie Rosenthal's absolutely hard as nails. I would love to just have a series all around Rosie. And I think it almost becomes his show a little bit at times. And I really like the actor playing Rosie. I think he really gives it his all.
He's very good. No,
I agree. Very, very good. Yeah, and my quick final thoughts for this one is, again, I think it's a strong episode. I think it's having the series from here on in is having to do so much to get to the end of it and tie up ends and remember narratives that they've set up previously. So there's a lot going on, but it just about makes it work, as opposed to last week where I thought they put too much in. I think this week was nice to have, okay, what's going on in the camp? What's going on at Thorpe Abbott's? And I think they just about managed to get it all there. And I do enjoy a POW movie. So I like those elements of it. Matt, anything else before we get into episode 8?
I agree. I really liked a couple of the scenes. I thought the exploration of the changing of the number of missions the chaps had to fly was interesting, and you know, the reaction of that. Just another pretty interesting depiction of an element that you don't really think about.
Yeah, massively.
I think seeing a bit more of the camp this week was also really interesting. But again, we're struggling with the number of separate storylines that we're interweaving at times, and it becomes a little bit muddled sometimes, and I think that's more of a critique for the next episode, really.
Yeah, it's the edit more than anything else. I don't think it's not the weight given to storylines, it's not the writing or the acting. I think it's just the edit.
Oh no, what I think it is It's literally, there's a lot going on within the stories. And we've, in the earlier part of the series, we've had that time to get to know the context and the characters. And that's all been pre-established so that they can do this back end, which is quite busy. Worth noting that these two episodes, 7 and 8, were both directed by Dee Reese. She's a black director from the US, worked on Space Force, Bessie Smith biopic, When We Rise about Stonewall, and most interestingly, Mudbound from a few years ago, which was a very interesting movie about Black World War II veterans coming home to, I think it's Mississippi, and they have to get used to the fact that everything's still very much segregated post-war. So she's directed these two episodes. So that, this is kind of like her little block.
You wouldn't be able to tell. Like, it's very streamlined. It's very good.
Fits in perfectly with, you know, the rest of the tone of the other episodes that have been directed by other directors, for sure. And they're all very competently. It's all very competently directed.
Massively.
For sure.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Yeah.
Pilot the Bombardier. Did you know you can join the Fighting On Film Patreon for as little as £2.50 per month, which includes a vote in the Patreon pick, exclusive podcast news, guest announcements, and a hell of a whole lot more. Now let's get this baby home.
I'm Captain Dale Dye, and you're listening to Fighting on Film.
So, Matt, episode 8, the floor is yours.
Yeah, so this is the episode where we get introduced to the Tuskegee Airmen, which is exciting. We knew it was coming. We've been anticipating it for a little while, and we get this really nice opening sequence of a raid in Italy. It's a night raid. They're in, I think it's P-40s they're in, and they're doing some strafing runs and a little bombing run, and it's, you know, CGI
is quite good.
It's
nice to have some fighters depicted. It's nice.
Yeah, it is. And we're introduced to a select number of the airmen from the 99th. We've got Shuti Gatwa as Lieutenant Robert Daniels. Doesn't get a great many lines in this episode, but he's introduced and he's...
But he looks great in the kit.
Oh, they all do. They all really good in it. And then we've got Brandon Cook, who plays Second Lieutenant Alexander Jefferson, who is the Tuskegee kind of lead character for this episode. We've got Jonathan Jules, who plays Lieutenant Westbrook. Josiah Cross, who plays Macon. Francis Lovell, who plays Captain Wendell Oliver Pruitt, and Bradley Banton, who plays Lieutenant Lee Archer. So basically, that's a flight of Tuskegee airmen. We're introduced to those. We're very much thrown into that, and then it's kind of introduced that, oh, now we're going to do Operation Dragoon, and we're going to fly P-51s a very long way and raid Toulon.
I mean, this is the first Dragoon that I've seen on screen. I couldn't recall anything else being Dragoon.
Yeah.
It might be one of the few times Dragoon's ever been portrayed.
There's probably been reference to it. I feel like there is one film that does reference it.
Let us know, Foff fans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we've got a little bit more of the camp. We've got Bucky playing his imaginary baseball game in the middle of the camp.
Losing
kind of going stir crazy at this point. 8 months on from Capture. And there's another reference to The Great Escape.
I think it'd drive me nuts not being able to know the scores and stuff. I think that'd drive me insane.
I'm sure it would.
Well.
I mean, I don't give a shit, but like, I'm sure it would piss you off. No end. I'm like, not knowing whether Luton's winning
or
not.
Luton gone in the old division.
Luton gone down. Luton gone down. I don't know.
Give it weeks.
Go some Germans walking past you going, ah, Rob, Luton. And then just not telling you anything about it.
Everton seemed to be doing well, Mr. Maguire. I'm like, what? What? Come back.
Yeah, so there's another little mention of The Great Escape. And Bucky talks about Brits made something happen. And there's a reference to them, you know, being executed and stuff like that. So the captivity is at this point really stretching them. And then we cut to Croz, who is planning the D-Day bombing missions for the 100th. He goes 72 hours without sleep. And there's a nice little sequence where that explains how hard it becomes. Like, it's the breakfast on the second day that it really hits you. And then he's going to the doctor to get some pep pills. And he's falling asleep on his feet, hearing things. And I really loved all the mise-en-scene in the HQ. In the planning office and stuff, all the paperwork and the boards and people milling around and
hive activity, stuff. Isn't it?
Yeah, great. It's really, really good. And then we cut again to, you know, Croz is obviously pining after Sandra, wondering where she is. There's a good little scene where he phones her, I assume, office that she's given him the number for, and the person on the phone refers to her as Captain Westgate rather than Subaltern. That's another little hint that she's not actually ATS.
Yeah, if you haven't told, you can tell.
Yeah.
With all the really obvious, do you really want to know where I'm going? Like last, the episode 7, where she's like, do you really want to know where I'm going? You know,
and he's like, yes, I quite clearly do.
I would
do
quite like
to know. She's not very good at cover stories. Like, she could give him a real... I'm just off to Northampton to make sure all the searchlight batteries are all working.
Yeah,
order. Just
exactly.
Something like that, you know.
Well, she said she was bad at lying, didn't she? That's probably why.
Well, that's a fucking shit thing to be like bad at when you're a spy. I know. SOE operative. I'm terrible at lying.
Maybe that's why she's good.
we pick up with Sandra in Paris, and we meet her on a bus, and then she's seen in a different costume, sauntering around kind of the suburb, and she walks down an alleyway, and we don't know why she's walking down an alleyway past some Germans. And she goes into like an art dealer's and says, I've covered the entire building, and then empties a purse onto the table. And it's got like three little, not sure what they are. Do you know what they are? Three little metal things.
I thought they were detonators, perhaps.
Detonators, perhaps.
I thought they were detonators.
Yeah, and she's like, and I'm like, what have you covered the entire building with? Like, what does that mean, Sandra? You have to give us a little bit more because we haven't seen you doing this.
No.
You don't know what you're doing. Like, what
it's
are you doing in Paris?
She's SOE
to prepare us for D-Day. What's going on here? I'll come back to this in a moment, but the use of her character is terrible.
Not the best.
We get the briefest look at D-Day from the air, which is really cool. So Rosie is describing
shot, though,
it to Croz after he's woken up, and you get that really cool shot, sort of quarter shot along the beach.
The thing is, they tease that at the end of episode 7, if you're watching on Apple TV, they tease that
they do.
Shot. And they also tease it in the intro, but that's literally all you get.
Yeah.
So I was thinking we'd see some bombing raids over the beaches by the 100th or inland. I thought we'd at least get some of that, but no, you get a lovely little man looking out of his cockpit I assume might be Utah or Omaha. Like,
again,
it's lovely.
It's what they see of the war, isn't it? We're very much getting that. We're not.
And I was like, just take me over
more.
A little bit, please. I'd love to see Normandy from there. Come on. But they don't.
And then we get a really cool little raid sequence with the Tuskegee Airmen for Toulon.
That's
and
nice.
We see the P-51s coming in on rocket strafing runs, and they take a lot of flak, and they lose most of the flight, leading to three of them becoming POWs, which was a really interesting sequence, because can you imagine the feeling of being a black airman being captured by Germans? It must have been that, and being obviously a Jew as well.
Yeah,
those are the two kind of demographics you know must have been terrifying. Get to see another Luftwaffe intelligence officer trying to pretend he knows everything about America, talking about jazz and Detroit.
I love that.
There's lots of really interesting racial intonations of what he's suggesting, and you know, he talks about.
It's a very well written piece of dialogue.
There's some interesting questions posed. Do you know any countries that are better? Is the response of, I think it's Macon. When the German intelligence officer asks, why are you fighting for a country that doesn't think you're, you know, worthy? And I love how that response is immediately juxtapositioned with a cut to the three of them entering Stalag Luft 3. Yeah. And you've got kind of just peppered in the background. It's not heavily in there, but there's noticeable shouts from white POWs saying that they should be somewhere else.
Yeah.
Hinting at, you know, segregation, because
some good old boys somewhere, you know,
US Army segregated. Yeah, it's not the warmest of welcomes, that's for sure.
No.
And then we get a little scene where they arrive in Buck and Bucky's hut.
Yeah.
And two of the airmen. Weird that they spread the airmen around a little bit, but I guess it's where the bunks were free.
Put them in the hut with the main cast in. That's useful.
Right. Absolutely. And it's not the warmest of welcomes there either. And
no.
Yeah, there's a nice little sequence later on where Bucky sort of like chats with Alexander, talks about, well, I knew that you guys wouldn't be spies. That's why I let you stay.
It's quite telling. Yeah.
It is. So again, some interesting little sequences there. Then we're straight back to the UK, and there's a nice little prep montage showing some of the bits and bobs going on. And then there's a lot of discussion around, again, back at the camp. So we are jumping back and forth a lot.
Yet again.
And we kind of conclude in the camp, and they're realizing that the Russians have entered Germany. The Allies have landed in France. They've approached Paris.
Isn't this in the bag ration that's going on here?
Yeah. So the crossing the Vistula and stuff like that.
Yeah. They're pushing Germany's fucked.
Clearly by mid 44, you just go, actually, you know what? No, this ain't gonna do it.
No.
So they're discussing the three possible outcomes of their situation, that they're moved, that they're all executed summarily, or there's a pitched battle when either Allied forces reach the camp, or basically the Germans try and execute them en masse, and
they fight their way out.
There's a cool little montage where they show the chaps working on the stump puller, pulling up tree stumps as exercise to get ready for, you know, either the march or actually having to fight the guards, making little wooden knives and stuff, and how to use them, and using a weighted sock as a weapon, little things like that.
Yeah, it's a bit DIY. Really, I like that.
Yeah,
it's nice.
Yeah, it's a bit of a 18 montage almost.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. crack out the mini Rugers, boys.
But yeah, so I mean, for me this week, my favorite scene was definitely the Toulon raid. The scenes around that as well were really interesting. Mm. And in terms of Ali, the little wooden Bowie knife that one of them's seen carving
is very funny.
And the Tuskegee guys have got some really gorgeous kit, you know, their suits and the shoulder holster 1911s,
cool.
and Gotwa looks great in
He looks great in anything, that lad, though, doesn't he?
In the bomber jacket,
absolutely fabulous. Yeah. No, it's great to see the Tuskegee Airmen coming in. I think inferring from what I've seen about Orloff writing them, I think they were meant to be maybe a little bit more involved than they are, because they do come in right at the end.
It does leave you wishing.
Yeah,
you know, there was more of them, and it is almost a soft pilot.
It is, really.
If it was the 90s, you could say it was a soft pilot.
Yeah, it's a backdoor pilot, definitely.
Right.
Yeah, like I just wish I almost think somewhere at some point, some studio execs come in and gone, right, we're cutting this from perhaps 11 episodes to 9. Or because it feels like you definitely could have got an episode out of the camp itself.
Well, there's, you know, so much.
There's a lot going on here.
There's a lot going on, but there's so much exposition within the Tuskegee dialogue. You know, they're all using their full names. They're all explaining missions to each other. And it's like, if this had had a little bit more room to breathe, this would have been more organic. There's just a couple of lines in there where you're like, over the radio on a mission, why are you using his full name and rank?
Because we learned a few weeks ago that there was stuff. We can't really say what it was, but there was something massively cut. Doesn't affect the narrative, but it was just something else that would have added onto the show that we assume somewhere, maybe when we speak to John Orloff in a few weeks' time, that things were cut just because of time. And, you know, it's a massive studio project. I understand something's going to be shelved. As a writer, not everything you write makes the final cut anyway. But sometimes with this late stage Masters of the Air, I feel like I don't want to say like I feel like we're rushing over it too much, but sometimes I'm like, just breathe a little bit if you could, you know. And I understand if you can't, but I'm just like, I'd love to spend some more time with the Tuskegee guys. I'd love to spend a bit more time with the ground crew on Thorpe's Abbot. I'd love to have seen an episode with them doing their daily routine. But obviously, this isn't, we're not in the 90s, you know, series don't have 26 episodes anymore. That streaming's kind of made that a thing, and we don't get those seasons anymore.
I want a bottle episode inside Starlight Glove 3 where they're all in the hut chatting.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, the, you know, they enforce a curfew on them and they all have to be chatting, you know, in a thing. Yeah, that's what we'd do. But no, yet, you know, yet again, we've said it for weeks that we're desperately close to the end, and now we've got one episode to go. Yeah. I think
next week we're going to ask for your one word or one sentence reviews of what you've thought of the show.
The entire way.
Some of those out.
Definitely.
I'm looking forward to finishing the show and seeing what everyone thinks of it. Yeah. Its totality.
I mean, for my sort of my final thoughts of the series so far, I feel a bit sad, really, in a way, because I was 7 when Band of Brothers came out. So, like, I didn't really get the grandioseness of it. When The Pacific came out, I saw it a year after it broadcast because I didn't have Sky, so I rented it on DVD when it came out. But this time, I'm like, I've been part of it. I feel like I've been there the whole way through, and I'm going to be a bit sad that I don't have like this weekly series to chat about with people. You know, it's a weird one. Like, this feels like a monumental thing. Like, it feels like this big thing and we're not going to have it. It's just a bit of a weird feeling. I don't know what you feel about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean.
Do join us next week for episode 9 of Masters of the Air, when it's all going to come to a head. What's going to happen to Bucky and our 100th bomb group pals? Join us again to find out. And don't forget to use the code FOFFPODCAST at checkout on airfix.com. Got a last couple of weeks to use the link. Get yourself some money off some model kits. We'd love to see them if you do. So join us again next time for more Masters of the Air. We'll catch you again next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.